we know that an Hilchus Yom Tov is a significant difference between a Hilchus Yom Tov and a Hilchus Shabbos. And principally that expresses itself, not only, but principally it expresses itself in the fact that in Parshas Bo we find Achasher Yeochel L'chol Nefesh U'Levado Ye'asol L'chol Nefesh. But Ochel Nefesh, food preparation activities are permissible on Yom Tov, and not permissible on Shabbos. This is the defining mark, really, of Yom Tov. Now, good, we also have Hatzor's Mutter, whatever, perhaps because it's necessary to facilitate Ochel Nefesh, to bring it from place to place. But this is the defining aspect of Yom Tov. And I've always been fascinated by the fact the Gemara Simcha, when he discusses the notion of Yom Tov as distinct from Shabbos, and he bases it upon an idea that's from the Rambam. The Rambam he doesn't quote the Rambam by name, but the Gemara Simcha did not write any of the Rambam codes for his sefer. For all the years since it's been out, the world has been scrambling to provide the Rambam codes. Because Rabbi Simcha was an awesome guy. I mean, he called a Torah Kula literally, and all its finest details was at his command. So it's based on a Rambam in the third Chelak of the Mor Zavucham, I think Perek Lamed Gimel. And the Rambam writes that one of the aspects of Yontif is to bring Achdus, to bring unity among the people. That's a major aspect of Yontif. And from that standpoint, Ramea Simcha connects it with the halachic structure of Yom Tov. He said that what's Shabbos, basically, each one of us has to stay in our own place. You can't move things from place to place. The Torah is prohibited. If someone comes unexpectedly, we're very limited in what we could do to provide for him. We can't cook for him on Shabbos. We can't bring food from somewhere else. So basically, whoever is part of our crew, that's part of our crew, and that's it. You know, nobody can come, and there's no place to go, because then you go to someplace else, they have the same problem. All of a sudden, 10 people are marching to the guy, you know, 3 blocks away, what's he going to do with us? So, Yom Tov, on the other hand, lends itself to conviviality. You can bring food from place to place. If you don't have enough, you can cook food, you can shecht. So it lends itself to social interaction between people in a very uninhibited and unlimited sense. And he says that's because the essential nature of Shabbos, he said, each one of us celebrates on our own. The binding force is we all celebrate in the same Rabbeinu Shalom in the same way. That's what binds us together. I celebrate Shabbos in New York, and someone in Chicago, someone in Los Angeles, someone in Bnei Brak, in Yerushalayim. So we all serve the Rabbeinu Shalom in the same fashion. That's what binds us together. Yom Tov is the cohesiveness of the celebration, is what binds Klal Yisrael. Is that we celebrate jointly, we celebrate together. And thus, what comes out is the Yom Tov, which has the social focus, more than Shabbos, which is really purely the Meronah Lamokam. So that's its philosophical agenda, according to the Rambam. And the halacha exactly bears that out. Shabbos, the halacha, is consistent with the fact that it's not the social interaction which is the ikar, service of the Rabbeinu Shalom. And on Yom Tov, when social interaction is at the core of much of Yom Tov, so did the Torah v'dafka l'arochel nefesh. So it's rare that we see so clearly the connection between the structure of the halacha and the philosophy that's behind it. So this Rambam always struck me, this Meremei Simcha, as being an awesome insight. Now, it's very interesting that what does the word chag actually mean? We call the Shalosh HaGolim, we call chagim. We do not call chag HaMatzah, chag HaShavuot, or chag HaSukkot. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not called Chagim in the Torah. But what does the word Chag actually mean? So the Ritziv tells us that this is connected with a Pasuk that the root of the word is a pasuk in Tehillim, which says Yachul Yachugu Biyanu Kishika, means they swayed and they shook like a drunk person. So the Nitziv says that what is the meaning of this? And that this describes someone who dances. Because a person that dances sways and shakes. He said, and where do we celebrate? What is our mandate that we celebrate the Chag? That we dafka come to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim. So it's not an individual celebration. It's with the tzibur of Klal Yisrael, the celebration of them, to be dafka. And we can't sit at home. We're mandated to come to the Beis HaMikdash to celebrate with the rest of Klal Yisrael. So he says, the very word Chag means a joint celebration. It's not only, it's the word that the Torah uses, actually Chag, implies the joint celebration that the Rambam describes. So we need in that regard to keep a certain focus on what Yom Tov is supposed to be. The strengthening and the interaction, you know, between people. And this was why, that one of the reasons that Yerovam ben Nevat, he had varied reasons, but Yerovam ben Nevat did not want people to be oil regal. There were varied reasons for it. Chazal tell us one of the reasons is because if they came to be oil regal, Domra Melech's descendants would sit in the Azara and everyone else would stand, and even Yerovam would have to stand, so they would see that he's not the real deal. So that's why he didn't want to come. But he found another reason as well. Rehoboam's advisors told him to impose harsh taxes. And in the aftermath of that, the resentment that that caused, so Yerovam was able to start a rebellion against him. A revolt, and a pocketbook issue. But what was he concerned? He was concerned that if the people went and they actually celebrated together with all the shvatim in Yerushalayim, that the friendship that would bring about, the achdus that would bring about, would make the rebellion short-lived. How could he maintain the resentment, which was necessary to fuel the rebellion, only by seeing that the people didn't mix with each other? And he went out of his way to be mavadal. He put up special guards to prevent people from being oil regular. Why? Because if they would be oil regular, they realized that's the end of his rebellion. So he would say, what am I making a war? I mean, I have a million friends from Yehuda and from Binyamin, and what are we fighting about? If you disharmony and distrust grows and takes root and an atmosphere of strangeness. When you know a person, you're not usually suspicious of them, you don't distrust them. Who do we distrust? A stranger. Now we assign to him all types of malignant intentions. Now my friends wouldn't do this to me, but look what this guy's out. Now I might be right and I might be wrong. But if I get to know him, I'll find out the answer. But from the distance, I can resent him. Now, Yom Tov has one particular problem in terms of its halachas. Everything in the world is fine, whether if it's everything broadly is osur, everything is broadly mutar. Shabbos, that all namadesh malachas are osur, there are no exceptions. That's one thing. The weekday, it's all mutar, it's also fine. Shabbos, Yom Tov is a hybrid. Certain things are mutter, certain things are osur, certain times the same malach is mutter, sometimes a mitzvah, sometimes a divisa deraisa. So once we ever get to those areas of halacha, so we wind up with tremendous lack of clarity. Tremendous lack of clarity. And, you know, the old types of popular notions, what's mutter, what's osur, whether, you know, they exist in the Shulchan Aruch, they don't exist in the Shulchan Aruch. You know, everyone knows that Hitzor is Mutter on Yom Tov. What is the defining aspect? Hitzor and Avor? Is it a defining aspect of Yom Tov? So, Mutter is Mutter. I carry on Tuesday afternoon, I carry on Yom Tov afternoon. but it's far from so simple. Everyone knows that it's always mutter on Yom Tov. And that's where the problem was. It has most of the malachas on Yom Tov. There was a tremendous amount of restrictions surrounding it. First of all, the Gemara tells us the way Shulchan Aruch paskens. Yeah, we both Rishon and read the Gemara. The Gemara tells us there's a principle of mitoch. All the Torah talks about is ochel nefesh. Yet Beis Hillel has a notion that mitoch shehutra etzor letzorach etzutra namu shalei letzorach. Etzor is mutish letzorach, so it's mutish shalei letzorach. Where the principle of mitoch comes from? It's a very good question. Chazal left us guessing because there's no Gemara that tells us the source. So what exactly is based on is a matter of speculation among the Mefarshim. We don't have an exact source for the rule of Mitoch. Now, what does it mean, Shalei L'Tzorach? I don't need any need at all. It's not Mutter. So most Rishonim do not. Rashi may hold like that when it comes to Hitzorach. Most Rishonim do not hold like that, nor does the Shulchan Aruch Paskim like that. Tosfos says the words L'Tzorach and Shalei L'Tzorach are really missing a word, an applied word. And that is the Torah Ochel Nefesh and Shalei the Torah Ochel Nefesh. This is necessary for food production. That's Torah. And Shalei the Torah means not necessary for food production. But it does necessitate it to be a purpose for it on Yom Tov, that it have a Torah Yom Tov. If there's no Torah Yom Tov, I'm not allowed to carry. So let's not talk even now about the issues. There are issues of achana. If I carry my shul, my weekday shul to Shabbos, to shul on Yom Tov, my weekday shul is home. I'm going to shul anyhow. So I'll carry my talis with me. That's the issue of achana. Today is Erev Tov Shivan. There's no issue of achana, right? So I'll say, you know, I'll carry my Shabbos talis, but I'm not the talis. I'm not going to wear it today, but I'll wear it tomorrow. Not the Yisra, with the Yisra, Erev Tov Shivan would work, but without Erev Tov Shivan. I carry, bring my talis, pay after Yom Tov, I'm going to shul. So, when I go to shul, I'll bring my weekday talis with me, I'll leave it in shul. And that's Shalei L'Tzorach Yom Tov. And according to Tosfos, the Lidah Shulchan Aruch Paskens, the Yisra D'Oraisa. I mean, not a Yisra D'Oraisa, Pasuk Menachah. It's a violation of the Sasa Melacha on Yom Tov. It's very easy, and with the attitude that everything's mutter, to forget that everything is far from mutter. Now, Chazal very carefully analyzed this pasuk. Achashayei ochel l'chol nefesh, hu levado yeosel l'chol. So what does l'chol nefesh mean? Achashayei ochel, what l'chol nefesh? And especially at the end of the pasuk, the Lachem defines who the parameters of his heter are for. Chazal, we'll come back to this, but Chazal said Lachem implies v'lei la'akum, not to non-Jews, because they're a different group than us. And Lachem also implies not for animals. So that's already defined at the end of the pasuk, the Lachem. So what does L'chol Nefesh mean? The Gemara in Tzuva says there's a principle that we know about Shav L'chol Nefesh, something which supplies what we call a universal need. How to define a universal need is not so easy, as we will see. But it has to be something which defines the universal need. So the Gemara in Tzuva discusses something which is included in the need and what's not included in the need. The Gemara says to burn incense, as much as I may be a fan of incense, but nevertheless, that's not the rush over the whole nefesh. Not everybody must burn incense. So, consequently, that is not included in the heter of Achashiyu, Ochel Lechol Nefesh. On the other hand, the Gemara says, if you need Achashiyu, Ochel Lechol Nefesh, in the earlier times in history, venison was the food of the kings and the nobility, not of the commoner. So let the noble one want to shecht the deer on Yom Tov. Is he allowed? Well, deer meat is not eat by everybody. Most people don't eat deer meat. So maybe that's also not Shabbat Lechol Nefesh. So the more in effect answers that when it comes to deer meat, it's really only an issue if you have it or you don't have it. But if I had it, so the poor people would also eat it. They just don't have it. But if they were invited to the king and the king gave it to them, they were also digging. So the food is in that regard, the food is Shabbat Lechol Nefesh, perhaps. If we had it, we would all eat it. That's another way to look at it, too. But that's one way to look at it. There's another way to look at it. That all of us need to eat. We all need to eat. Each one has our own diet. You know, this guy's a vegetarian. And he eats only vegetables. This guy is a meat and potatoes man. This guy likes chicken. This guy eats a fish. But at the bottom line, everyone has to eat. Can't escape from eating. So the potato eating, what I eat, yeah, that varies. Different people eat different things. But eating, everyone eats. So since what we're involved with is preparing food to eat, is considered Shabbat Lechol Nefesh. Now, what is not considered Shabbat Lechol Nefesh? Yeah. We have all types of questions which have arisen over the course of history. What happens if something is necessary for a person that's ill? Is that Shabbat Lechol Nefesh? You know, when we're sick, everyone wants to get better, that's true. But Baruch Hashem, most of us are not sick most of the time. So how do we look at it? So, by and large, we find that the Rishonim really showed him hold. The health need is not considered Lechol Nefesh. That's the trouble of Lechol Nefesh. But most people are healthy at any given time. So therefore, it's true. If I would be sick, I would also want to have medicine. But Baruch Hashem, I'm not. Which leads us to a very interesting problem. If medicinal use is not considered a Shabbat Lechol Nefesh, suppose somebody needs medicine on Yom Tov. And I have the medicine. He asks him, yeah, I have the medicine in my house. I have 10 pills that you need. So what can you do? Can you take them home with you? Put them in your pocket and take them home? The answer is no, you can't. It's not Shabbat Lechol Nefesh.
What if somebody has asthma and is required to carry?
First of all, you're fortunate that you live in an Eruv. You don't have that. It's one of the reasons that it's good to have an Eruv, because you get around this problem.
Well, what if there was no Eruv?
And people that have conditions where they may need medicine for serious conditions immediately, so we tell them to carry. Usually to carry a Shema.
So, say there was an incident, and I think it may have happened. Somebody, their face got swollen, let's say, because of some infection, and there are dentists and doctors in the shul, and I go over to my, I think it happened to my wife once. She had a facial infection near her eyes, so I mentioned it to one of the doctors in the shul, and he said, come to my house and I'll give you some penicillin to get better. So the infection will go down. wouldn't be permissible on Yantif?
Without an Eruv? Not normally, except that probably an infection in the head is probably dangerous.
Yeah, so
that is dangerous. Yes, it's dangerous. Any infection in the head.
Anything near the eyes is very dangerous.
Yeah, and also in the head in general, it's dangerous because the blood tends to flow back through the brain. So, consequently, for that reason, you would be allowed to shut up some color that's involved.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Even a child, yeah. But a young stick ahead. So, this is one of the big advantages of having an arrow. And all the medicinal problems are solved. I said it's very hard to know what's considered a universal need. You know, Baruch Hashem, the world is moving away from smoking. It's a slow change, but society is changing, without any doubt. Whatever, whether as a result of public policy, public education, a combination of all of them, but we're moving away from a world of smoking. I mean, when I come to shul on Yom Tov in the afternoon, so I pass by a place and there's a man always outside, he's smoking in the street, outside his house. Can't smoke in his house anymore. So he's always on the street smoking outside when I pass by. But the question is it really, obviously a person shouldn't be smoking. That's without any doubt. But is it actually a violation of Yom Tov or not? Now in most of history they did not consider it a violation of Yom Tov. And we have even recorded the fact that the Chacham Tzvi used to smoke on Yom Tov. But rather interestingly, he smoked only on Yom Tov Sheni, not on Yom Tov Rishon, which is itself a strange practice, because in general the halacha disdains any difference between Yom Tov Rishon and Yom Tov Sheni at all. Because if we would allow such things to take root, then eventually Yom Tov Sheni would run out of steam and forget about it. So they insisted that the halachic standards for Yom Tov Sheni, other than what Chazal specifically legislated for Mason, other than that, that Yom Tov Sheni and for Cholim, that Yom Tov Sheni have the full din of Yom Tov. So why did the Chacham Tzvi not smoke on the first day and smoke on the second day? So I presume the answer to that question is that not to smoke for a day he was used to, because every week was Shabbos, he didn't smoke for a day. By the time the second day came around, it was getting uncomfortable. You used to smoke and you're not feeling very comfortable anymore. So if he had the same necessity on the first day of Yom Tov, maybe he would have smoked on the first day of Yom Tov too. In other words, suppose, for example, it was one of those years when Pesach came out on Sunday, first day of Yom Tov. So maybe he would have smoked the first day of Yom Tov too. But by and large, the Chacham Tzvi, as was observed, he didn't smoke Yom Tov Rishon, he smoked Yom Tov Sheni. So that would be the rationale why he did it on Yom Tov Sheni and not on Yom Tov Rishon. Not to differentiate between the Raisa and the Rabbanan, but rather the need was greater on Yom Tov Sheni. If he had that level of need on Yom Tov Rishon, perhaps he would have spoke to as well. Now, but how do we get to the notion that smoking is mutter altogether? How could we define it as a practice as a shovel chol nefesh? No matter how much people smoke, but not everybody smoked. We don't even know if necessarily most people smoke. And then we have a second problem, that the women historically didn't smoke at all. So that's already 50% of the world didn't smoke. So how do we define a universal need? Well, some say, listen, I guess we look at the men differently than the women, and all men smoke, so maybe that's the end, you go bus a roif. In today's world, you don't have roif. Well, you go with the people don't smoke in today's world. So, could we define it as a universal need? What would you define it as a universal need? There was a very famous piece in the Pnei Yeshua, Sech Shabbos, and he wants to state that people use smoking to relax, as they do still today. People relax by taking a smoke. So he said, after the meal, it's very good to take a smoke. It relaxes the system and it aids the digestion because it gets relaxed. So, since people do it for relaxation, everybody needs to relax. It's only a question how we relax. One guy relaxes, takes a walk around the block. One guy relaxes, the other schnapps. And another guy relaxes with a smoke. So he says, what's the difference? Everybody needs to relax. You just pursue it in different ways, but the goal is a universal one. So that's why the Bnei Yeshua wanted to define smoking as something which is a universal one. It's, which is Shalom HaNefesh, a universal need is addressed by it. Now the question is, what do we do in a world where tons of people won't smoke as a matter of principle? They think it's deleterious to health and they don't want to smoke. So if we, you know, even we can question even if in the Bnei Yeshua's formulation, you know, it's how good it is. The negatives outweigh the positives. But so the question is, how do we define it? So there were those that say that in today's world, since we know that it's unhealthy, not a healthy practice, and therefore it certainly remains in that shovel the whole effort. Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's how is a certain balance that a very great place to cast, that he's able to somehow attribute a weight to all the different factors in his equations. You know, most of the world, everything they see with the same level. It's factor A, factor B, factor C, factor D, and Allah. They're all the same. Great place can have a sense and a havana of what the weight of every single aspect is, how far it goes. So he writes that something that billions and millions of people do ought to be defined as Shavu L'chol Nefesh. In other words, he didn't take Shavu L'chol Nefesh as meaning everyone does it. He didn't take Shavu L'chol Nefesh as meaning most people do. Meaning it's not an eccentric need. That's the way he took Shavu L'chol Nefesh. Mugmur is eccentric, you know, into incense. But regular people are not into incense. But smoking, yeah, millions and millions of people smoke. So it's not an eccentric need. So therefore, if it's not eccentric, that's considered Shavu L'chol Nefesh. But on the other hand, he says, it's hard to call it Shavu L'chol Nefesh when there are tens of millions of people who won't smoke because they say it'll kill you. They don't want to smoke. So they're saying, this is antithetical. Not only is it not a need, it's negative for a person altogether. And most, a big chelik of society is declared negative.
We know that it kills
people? Yes, we do. Yeah. So, but functionally, most of society, there are tons of people in society, millions and millions of people in society, that look at it as something negative. So how could we come along and define this as Shavu L'chol Nefesh when they say that the only thing Shavu L'chol Nefesh about is that it can kill everybody? That's the sole Shavu L'chol Nefesh.
It's a factor, mitzad l'kan l'kan, it's a sfar l'kan l'kan.
So he put weight on each factor on which. Now how do you decide between those two sfars?
What about the Yeshua? Where does that come from?
That's so a lot of people want to say, listen, it's hard to define as a need when something is, you know, killing people. You know, so they sure look like relaxing, it's fostering health. Everybody needs, you know, to do that. You know, helping people have certain health needs that everybody has. So, another Godel once described Ramesh as a top. Very interesting, the perspective of another Godel on Ramesh. He said, the halacha. It's like you go to a hospital and you have a CAT scan machine, for example. He said there's tons and tons of technicians that know how to use the CAT scan machine. He says, but how many people in the world actually know what makes the CAT scan machine tick? And if you do this or this or that, what exactly the effect of that is going to be at every single possibility? If you make this slight change in its mechanism, how it's going to affect the totality of what the machine is. That's a small number of people in the world. You can find one person in the whole country that understands exactly what that's about. He says the halacha is a machine. It's a very fancy machine. So there are a lot of technicians that know how to use the machine. They could use it well. He says, but there's one chacham that knows that a machine, knows the kishkas in a machine, and knows that a machine actually works. Understands tolerances and whatever, you know, what makes everything work. He says, that's our Moshe. He's the one that knows that a machine works. He's able, and it's true, but for that reason, to quantify every factor and to show that the halacha is based not just on one simple factor. It's a whole balance of 10 different factors and how they all fit together and produce the halachic result that is mekubal in the Shulchan Aruch or mekubal in the Achrayim. It's because of all of these factors together. And therefore, once one defines all the factors, what happens if I change one of those factors? I can radically change the results. But that's only the person that understands this, that what all the factors are, which brought us to this decision. He doesn't just see the decision, I see a bottom line. This is awesome. To realize this is only awesome because it's a balance of five factors one way and four factors the other way. And if I change one factor, I could change the whole halacha in this regard. That you really have to understand the whole inner workings of halacha. So that's awesome that there's a Ramosha wrote in a tshuva. It's not in the Igros. It's published in a journal. I don't think it was ever published in the Igros. It's published in a journal, Maria. And he wrote the following. He says, on balance, the end of his punchline was that I, bal nefesh, you know, would not smoke on Yom Tov. He didn't ban smoking, but he said that the tightness against smoking is significant enough he felt yet in his lifestyle, more than 20 years back. So I think it was written in Tovshin Memala, close to 30 years ago already, is that one ought not to smoke on Yom Tov. Now, we might even say today maybe it's even a little worse than that. I mean, because the non-smoking is gaining, you know, more and more momentum. But I wouldn't say yet, you know, it's hard to say that we've overridden Rav Moshe in the sense that the matias is so radically changed. I mean, there are, what?
Mutter, but better.
That's what I would think remains. You know, in accordance with Rav Moshe's shock, you still have on balance. There are more and more people that won't smoke, but you still have tens of millions of
them.
So he felt the bal nefesh wouldn't smoke on you. And a person is very meticulous in his observance of the halacha wouldn't smoke.
Is there any ikur in halacha as far as addictive behavior that plays a factor?
Well, that's a whole different question. Let me tell you, I thought I saw someplace that Rav Moshe Zatzal himself alluded to this. I don't recall, but I believe I saw a line in a tshuva someplace. And there is a line. There's a psak from Rav Bozhna from Bnei Brak, which I really have always felt is the most insightful psak that I ever saw on the subject of smoking. And he writes the following: he says, "It's also to begin to smoke." When a person is going to begin an addictive behavior, so that he's in control of himself, he can decide to do it or not to do it.
Does he write this?
Yeah. He wrote, it's also to begin to smoke. That's his psak. The Havana, he doesn't go into it, but Havana is very simple and very elegant. Before a person begins an addictive behavior, so he's in control of himself, so he can decide to do it or not to do it. Once a person gets involved in an addictive behavior, we cannot always talk about Osir and Mutter anymore. Because the addiction is more powerful than a person's will, normally. And a person has to go through all types of special things, detox and behavior modification and whatever, all types of things to be able to deal with an addiction.
He's still
you can't say osir to such a person. Shad is good, so he's not. You can't tell him it's an isra. It's an onus. That's all.
Okay.
It's not shayah. So therefore, right, it's an onus. It's not an isra. That's exactly the onus. This person is not doing an isra by smoking. He's an onus. I mean, should a person, if you feel that this is ultimately, it's only doing it because it's an onus. So obviously, if you're a halachic Jew, you should want to get out of that problem, not to keep doing something ba'inus. You know, one's not looking to eat chazer ba'inus. You know, if never somebody wound up with it, you know, that they were starving to death and they had to, it's fine. But no one wants to be in this situation. We endeavor not to wind up in that situation. So addictive behavior is a whole different, and that's really alluded to where emotional is true, but is a whole different parsha.
So what does he say once someone's smoking?
He just says it's awesome to begin. That's all. Which is exactly the truth of the matter. It's unbelievably insightful. In other other words, that's when you can talk osur and muti, you can talk before a person and you're involved. Once a person is addicted to something, then osur and muti is not the resolution of the problem. And it touches a lot of things. We understand in that regard more and more addictive behavior today. We're addicted to all types of things. Many negative things. So, the bottom line is that to know what is considered Shavu L'Cholnefesh is not easy. It's not a simple definition. Some would say universal, some would say Roi, Ramesh Zatav would say very common and widespread use, non-eccentric use.
Yeah.
So Tosa says that showering on Yom Tov is also manatar. Why? Because Tosa said that, in effect, taking a hot shower every day is not a universal need. Doesn't mean a person's not comfortable if he does it, but is it a universal need? People go to Australia, right? They haven't put showers on the plane yet. Person can, I said you might want to, but that doesn't mean it's a necessity. Venison is a different story. Venison is a pshat, as I said, the symbol is pshat. Everybody wants to eat. Everybody eats, not wants to eat. Everybody eats. That's all. You eat this, I eat that, but something else. But is it necessarily, is it will be defining a need? So Taisa says we're not. Taisa says a raya from a Gemara in Shabbos. According to the Rif and the Rambam, bathing on Yom Tov is also the Rabbanan, not also the Matar. But according to Tosfos, it's the race. Now, what we haven't found yet to this day, there is no published tshuva of an Olam Godel who allowed, showering, hot showering on Yom Tov. There are some that speculate it's mutter, some that it's not mutter, but we do not have a published tshuva of any Olam Godel yet that wrote that such a thing as mutter. So I just left it at that point. It's, I don't think it's possible, to make a statement, a broad statement about it more than that. Cold shower could be mutter on Yom Tov, but one has to be very adept at being meticulous in halacha to do it. And that's why I tend to discourage it for most people. Because people in general not that meticulous. To be medactic in every little thing, not to squeeze the water out of their hair. For example. Not to violate chita, to remember not to use the soap, that the shampoo is a problem. These are not
The
watery liquid soap, but not hairy parts of your body.
Steam
the
mix.
Yeah, the mix. They have their own terrors. That's a different story.
That's a different
story. I also become a chosen. I think it's swim every Shabbos morning,
After you
get this. Oh. Well, not all of them do that. Yeah.
I just wanted to bring up, I think to remember when I was learning Shir HaShirim, that there's actually a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that says that it is a good thing to smoke after a meal. I could probably...
I'd like to see it. I'm not familiar with it. I don't recall this intentional either, quoting such a pasuk.
I don't remember that either. And we did that once on Shabbos night.
The Pnei Yeshua.
Regarding the hot showering, so even though no one writes that it's mutter, but part of you can use less than half of your body?
Not so simple. Oh. Rav Chaim's not even sure of that. Anything more than part of the other variety of his night is also. That's what he writes. It doesn't feel it's comparable to Hilch Shabbos, because here we're dealing with cooking the water, which is a deraisa. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about Birr on Yom Tov. Now, Birr is a very complicated story on Yom Tov. By and large, the shita that we hold like is that even those things which are normally done by hands, so it's not a shinoi to do them by hand, but nevertheless it's mutter to do Birr b'yad on Yom Tov, even though that's the normal way of doing it. It's not a shinoi. There are certain things, for example, spaghetti, you don't strain by hand. You don't put your hand into the pot, even if the water cooled off already, and take out the spaghetti by hand. And you take a strainer and you dump it through a strainer. So if I decide on Yom Tov that I'm not going to use the strainer, the spaghetti strainer, I'm going to take my hand and put my hand right into the pile of spaghetti. I'll use a fork, I'll be a little bit more elegant, and I'll take it out, you know, in that fashion. So the fork is also considered biyad. So that would be a shinoi from the normal way of doing it. But the halacha doesn't necessitate a shinoi. So even in those things where I normally do the brayer of biyad, if I have, you know, a pile of cherries and I have the rotten ones, I take the rotten ones and I throw them in the garbage by hand. I don't use any clay. I don't dump it into some machine to do the job for me. I take the rotten ones and I throw them out. Nevertheless, even though it's the derech to do Birr in that fashion, nevertheless it's mutter to do so on Yom Tov. The general restriction of Birr is, number one, it can only be done for what's the terech hayom, for what's needed today, which is in general true of Yom Tov. Number two, it can only be done with the types of things which are typically done one day at a time, which are not done for more than one day's use. And number three, I cannot use at least kalim, which is specially designated for Birr, as Birr kalim. There are restrictions in using those kalim. In other words, at least the kalim, which are typically used for things which are more than for immediate use, those kalim are also to use on Yom Tov. Now, the types of Birr, which are typically done with kalim, which are done for immediate use, are mutter to do on Yom Tov.
Slotted
spoon is certainly mutter on Yom Tov.
But Shabbos,
there are situations that it's mutter and situations that it's also. And Ramayla, you're best off, I tell people just to stay away from it. I mean, the halacha is, if you took, for example, a slotted spoon, and you put it into a bunch of coleslaw, and you immediately took it and brought it to your plate and dumped it out so that you have some of the liquid together with it, and just some happens to fall out, that would not be a question of Birr on Shabbos. If you held it and you let the liquid drain out, and then took the rest of the salad into your plate, that would be Birr. Now, in general, practical experience has taught me not to get involved in halachas, where you have to be amazing in halacha to get it right.
So Yom Tov is fine.
Yes,
so could you give a couple of examples that are usher on Yom Tov? A couple of practical examples, because I'm not clear what's usher. I know what's mutter. No, most things are mutter on Yom Tov.
Most of the Birr, most of the
type. A couple of practical examples that are usher.
Like a flour sifter is probably usher.
Do it for
so it's a lot of times people may do a lot of flour, like a whole bag of flour at once. So that might be also.
Even to do a little bit.
Even to do a little bit, yeah. So a lot of the types of Birr, which are also on Shabbos, they do mutter on Yom Tov. If you took a jar cover, for example, to pour a little, let's say, a can of tuna fish. And you want to pour the water out and just keep the fish. So you're taking the undesirable part from the desirable part. But you only do it for immediate use. So on Yom Tov, you certainly could use the cover of the tin can to hold the fish back in place and to facilitate straining off the liquid. That would certainly be mutter. Yeah.
You tell me you can't tune fish. Do you have to punch a hole in the bottom? Or
I'm not talking about opening it. I'm talking when it was opened already. When it comes to opening it, I'm from Ramosha's Chassidim. I don't open cans of chops.
I heard a very thing from yourself, a friend on the board with when it comes to toys, where it says the child throws toys all over the place. He said in the tape, I mean, I misunderstood it, that you're not allowed to pick up each toy individually. You have to scatter them all around and then pick them up.
That's assuming that they're all piled up in a jumble together. And if they're all laying on the floor side by side, I don't view that as a burrish.
Okay.
I mean, the idea that he mentions that you can scatter them around is the way Ramesh interpreted a Gemara in Klal Gadol, that a Talmud came and he dumped all the fruits out in front of the other Talmidim. So the effect of dumping out is not an act of burr itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Ramesh, everything wound up in a different place. So now anyone could take what they wanted. So he made broad use of this Sefer Timtza. That was Ramesh's idea. Okay. Well, I think we'll hold it at this point. That's kind of today. We'll take this up a little bit more.
I hope next week we'll go into Burr. More than we run into Burr. I just wanted to touch it a little bit.